Members, we're having some IT problems. I don't know, I was just trying to give us a hint from this morning's paper or something. A little article about the minute in there this morning. We're going to get started. The Department of Labor has passed out, or it's included in your folders, is their presentation on paper. So if we got a quorum now? Well, I'll call the meeting to order. President Sundin would move the minutes.
I do.
All right. Are there any additions or subtractions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's right. I'm supposed to ask that. All right. How about if I call down the Department of Labor and Industry? Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. You are one of our two major budgetary items, so it's good to have you here. Get you here early before everybody gets too into the details of which bill they're going to pass and which one they're not. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and make your presentation.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Mahoney and members of the committee. My name is Kristen Batson, and I'm the Acting Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm going to serve in this capacity until Commissioner-designee Nancy Lepink relocates to Minnesota. She's eager to take the helm and begin her work here and begin her work here with you. We have circulated on Friday a letter to you from Commissioner-designee Lepink, and that letter provides more information about her professional background and experience and the work that she's excited about doing at the Department of Labor and Industry. Without further comment, I will turn this over, the presentation over, to DLI Deputy Commissioner Chris Liefeld, and he will present our department overview, and then after that we'll be happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Liefeld, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Liefeld, and I'm Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Labor and Industry, and I appreciate the opportunity today to talk to you about the department and the work of the department. I'm going to identify slides as we go through this, so I'm turning to the agency operating areas slide. Minnesota continues to become a safer place to work. Minnesota OSHA data shows that estimated workplace injury and illness rate for 2017 was at its lowest level since the measurement started in 1973. OSHA data shows that there has been a 40% drop in the rate of work-related injuries in the last 15 years. DLI has certainly played an important role in making our work sites safer. Our mission is to ensure Minnesota's work and living environments are equitable, healthy, and safe, and our vision is to be a trusted resource, an impartial regulator for employers, employees, property owners, and other stakeholders. Our main office is located in St. Paul, with offices around the state of Minnesota. We have 440 full-time employees in the department, and you'll see on this first slide the operating areas of that the department runs, which are workers' compensation, MnOSHA, labor standards, apprenticeship, construction codes and licensing, the pipeline program, and youth skills training. And it also identifies general support of the department that works on behalf of the operation of the department. If you turn to the next slide, which is identified as agency organizational chart, this chart shows how the organization department is structured and also has the names of our leadership team and managers. The department has one deputy commissioner, of which I serve in that role, and I oversee workers' compensation in that responsibility. We have two assistant commissioners. Heather McGannon is our assistant commissioner who oversees general support, and general support includes HR, financial services, research and statistics, legal services, and projects and planning, and she is also responsible for the pipeline program. Scott McClellan, who is our second assistant commissioner, oversees construction codes and licensing division and labor standards division. Finally, two other folks I want to note who are also actually here in the audience today. Jim Kruger oversees MnOSHA for the department, and John Aiken oversees labor standards and apprenticeship. If you turn to the next slide, which is source of funds, FY 18 and 19, you'll see that only 2% of the funding for the department comes from the state general fund. Under workers' compensation, that is assessment dollars that are assessed on insurers and self-insured employers, and that's 67% of the funding of the department. CCLD, Construction Codes and Licensing Division, brings in through their fees, license, and permits 23%, and finally we get approximately 4% of federal dollars, and that's principally directed to our Minnesota OSHA program. If you turn to the next slide, base budget, fiscal year 18 and 19, the chart shows, let me first note, under workers' comp benefits, $93 million. I will get into that in a couple of slides later, but the rest of the pieces of the pie shows that CCLD, their base budget is $66.8 million, work comp $24.3 million, OSHA at $5.3 million, and then there's also identified the work comp modernization project. That's our technology project that the department is doing. It's in the implementation phase as we speak right now, and that project will be completed in August of 2020. If you turn to the next slide, which is the Workers' Compensation Division, you'll see that is an area that I oversee in my deputy role. I oversee workers' compensation. In the division, we work to ensure injured workers receive their medical and benefit payments in a timely manner and hopefully are able to get back to work. We ensure that happens by being seen by all the stakeholders, including the insurers, self-insurers, medical providers, and the bar, as stated in our vision, as a trusted resource and an impartial regulator. The department or the division, the work comp division, has four units: special compensation fund, compliance records and training, the ADR unit, alternative dispute resolution, and the vocational rehabilitation unit. We also have an office of ombudsman. That's a one-person office, and she deals with the really thorniest issues and problems that individual workers have, and she also proactively reaches out to small business. On the next slide, the Workers' Compensation Fund, I'm going to identify the bottom two bullets first and then come to the top three bullets. This money that comes in from the assessments, again, the insurers and self-employed insurers, pays for the administration of the Workers' Compensation Division and the state portion of the Minnesota OSHA programs at labor and industry. That money also supports other workers' compensation activities outside the Department of Labor and Industry, which are the Office of Administrative Hearings, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and the Department of Commerce Fraud Unit. The benefits you see identified, first, supplementary benefit, which is 3,000 claimants. Actually, that's combined with second injury, so it's 3,000 claimants for those two benefit packages total. Supplementary benefits program is a program that was repealed in October of 1995. These are additional benefits paid to certain workers receiving temporary total disability or permanent total disability benefits for injuries prior to October 1995. These benefits are equal to the difference between 65% of the statewide average weekly wage and the temporary total disability or permanent total disability benefit. The special compensation fund reimburses insurers and self-employed insurers for those supplementary benefit payments. The second injury program are claims for which the insured or the self-insured employer is entitled to reimbursement for the special compensation from the special compensation fund because the injury was a second or subsequent injury that the worker had. This law was, again, eliminated in 1992. The dollars, those benefits that go out for those programs will continue to go down over the upcoming years and decades, in part because folks will settle their claims, but also the reality is over years that people will pass away, and so, again, the amount of money going out will continue to be reduced. Finally, the third bullet there refers to money that the special compensation fund pays out, covering uninsured and bankrupt self-insured employers. The next slide, Minnesota OSHA compliance. It's important to recognize that OSHA is divided into two distinct areas. One is compliance, and the other is the workplace safety consultation. OSHA enforces the Minnesota OSHA Act and standards that assure safe and healthful working conditions for Minnesota workers through helping employers understand and comply with safety and health regulations, conducting workplace inspections, and issuing citations and requiring remediation for noncompliance. Looking at by the numbers down below, on average, the OSHA compliance conducts 1,840 compliance inspections each year. On the workplace safety side, this is an effort by this group of folks, staff, that come out by invitation from employers to provide free safety and health consultation services and inspections with a special focus on small, high-hazard industries. You'll see the bullets on this slide identify the different ways they do that, but let me note the last bullet, which describes safety grants. These are awards matching funds up to $10,000 to qualifying employers for projects designed to help keep employees safe by purchasing new safety or health equipment. If I move on to the Construction Codes and Licenses Division, which is headed up by our Assistant Commissioner Scott McClellan, this is the largest division in the department with 151 FTEs. Much of his staff are located throughout the state of Minnesota as inspectors working out of their home offices. This slide identifies the areas that the CCLD regulates, licenses, and inspects. And you can see by the numbers, they're a very active and proactive group of folks with 133,000 personal and business licenses that go out, nearly 110,000 electrical permits issued, of which most are online, and 186,400 inspections. CCLD also regulates codes and laws to protect the public. Again, this division plays a critical role as we continue to have a lot of construction going on around the state of Minnesota. They are out there on job sites on a regular basis. Moving on to the Office of Combative Sports. In 2012, DLI was asked to take over the Office of Combative Sports. This is a small but important role for the department and for this office. The office helps ensure that these combative sporting events are conducted in a manner that minimizes injuries and ensures fair competition. Moving on to labor standards plays a critical role in protecting workers and promoting compliance through enforcement and training. And you see the areas identified, child labor, minimum wage, overtime, prevailing wage, and the Women's Economic Security Act, which was passed in 2014. They impact a great number of folks throughout the state of Minnesota. As you look at the numbers, 25,000 inquiries regarding wage and hour laws, and nearly 64,000 workers served and impacted by their work. The next three slides describe programs that play a critical role in developing skilled workers here in the state of Minnesota. The first program identified here on this slide is the Apprenticeship Minnesota Program, which oversees compliance of the Minnesota Apprenticeship Act for 12,000 registered apprentices in more than 200 different apprenticeship programs. The program develops, registers, and monitors apprenticeship training, provides technical support to employers developing apprenticeship programs, and ensures opportunities for women and minorities to become apprentices. The next slide is the Minnesota Pipeline Program. This program is an innovative approach to address current and future workforce needs. The program supports employers in creating or enhancing a dual training approach where students receive a combination of related instruction strategically paired with on-the-job training. The program targets four high-growth industry areas with limited experience with Minnesota's apprenticeship system: advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, and information technology. 67 employers are active with the Pipeline Dual Training Program right now, with more than 900 dual training employees in the program. The Youth Skills Training Program was a small but important program for the department and was signed into law in 2017. It supports the development of partnerships between education and employers to provide students 16 years and older with classroom instruction, safety training, and paid work experience in high growth, high demand occupations. There's strong demand for these grant dollars, as you'll see by the numbers on the side there. Earlier this month, five partnerships were each awarded $95,000 grants to develop and implement these paid learning opportunities for students 16 years and older. Finally, last slide. I think it's important that you know where the department is located throughout the state. We're in St. Paul, as I said, on Lafayette Road. We have offices in Bemidji, Duluth, Mankato, Rochester, and St. Cloud. And again, our CCLD inspectors have home offices throughout the state of Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy, and I know Acting Commissioner Batson would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions for the witnesses today? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question, and it would be if you would define benefits. You refer to workman's comp benefits often enough. That my understanding is the only benefit they pay off to an injured worker would be monetary, just replacement, partial replacement of their wages. When it comes down to actual benefits, health benefits, retirement benefits, none of that's covered on an injured worker, correct?
Mr. Chair, members, representative, no, but when I describe benefits certainly are the wage replacement that you're describing, but also it would be paying medical benefits. It would also pay vocational rehabilitation benefits to get the injured worker back to work.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you. I'm talking about the benefits that an employee would receive. Let's say you're working by the hour or whatever the situation is. If you're injured and there are medical insurance payments to cover you as an employee and pension benefits paid in on my behalf or an employee's behalf, those aren't covered by workman's comp, correct?
Mr. Liefeld.
Mr. Chair, representative, again, if it's a work site injury, you're injured at work, the work comp insurer would be paying your medical benefits if you are injured at work.
My medical benefits or my medical bills?
Mr. Chair, representative, good clarification, your medical bills.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. So my understanding is, if Mr. Chairman, if someone is injured and it's a long-term injury, and let's say I'm covered with my medical insurance for my family and I'm unable to work, those benefits are not paid in on my behalf. So my family would be stuck without insurance and definitely a lapse in my retirement funds, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I didn't quite. If you're out of work and you have medical bills as a result of that work injury,
not bills, benefits.
Mr. Leifel.
Mr. Chair, members, could you describe, not to put you on the spot, Representative, but describe further when you say
benefits? Please, I'd like clear definition on this. Let's say I am injured, and my employer has me covered under workman's comp, and my medical bills are paid, of course. But part of my wage package is not only my wages, but my insurance paid in, my family health insurance, and my retirement benefits are contributed to, 401k or pension plan. Those payments cease if I'm not working, and they're not covered by the workman's comp. Correct?
Mr. Leifel.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd have to get back to you further as you get into the weeds, but no. I don't think workers' compensation would pay your 401k payments and that sort of thing, certainly. It would pay, again, looking at trying to get your wages and your medical bills, certainly, but, yeah, what you're describing
seems
to go beyond workers' compensation, but certainly I'd appreciate maybe the opportunity to look into that issue further for you.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Is it Leifeld?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's Leifeld.
Leifeld, my apologies. Two questions from your testimony. One on the pipeline program. I'm just a little unclear on the language you're using here about four high-growth industry sectors with limited experience with an apprenticeship. Is it the industries that have limited experience with apprenticeship or the people in the industries? I just need a little clarification there, and then I'll have a second question as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I could turn to Heather McGannon. Heather is the Assistant Commissioner who oversees the pipeline program.
Good morning. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Heather McGannon. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members. So the pipeline program represents four high growth, and those are industries. So there are the advanced manufacturing, healthcare, agriculture, and information technology. Typically, the individuals working in those industries have not had as much exposure with registered apprenticeship as well, but we're working on that.
A little clarification. Thank you for that.
Representative Dabney.
And then, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Leifeld. You indicated on the youth skills training that there are, I believe you said, 95 partnerships. And I'm just wondering if you could expand on that. Who are those partnerships typically, or give a couple of examples, and what's the geographic distribution of those partnerships?
Mr. Chair, members.
Go ahead.
So with the dual training program, a local partnership must have a school district as well as an employer, but they can also have other organizations, and they do. They will have higher education. They will have chambers of commerce, community organizations, nonprofits, and others. And so they can combine in whatever way makes the most sense for their local partnership. And currently, we have had seven current programs that have been approved by the Department of Labor and Industry, and those are programs that have their local partnership already together, their occupation identified, as well as they have been approved for their child labor pieces and what the work will be on site. So those have been approved. We have other local organizations or local partnerships that are in the process of that, so they haven't been approved by the Department of Labor and Industry. And right now, like our grant one pilot grants that were from July 1, 2018 to June 30th, 2020, there are 64 school districts, 107 employers, 7 post-secondary institutions, and 13 other organizations in that particular funding round. We only could fund 5. In the second round, which these programs will begin July 2019, we had 13 school districts, 51 employers, 6 other organizations, 5 post-secondary institutions. They are proportionately about 50-50 between the rural and urban.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I'll just add in one question. What's your average cost per participant? So if you have a student, is it costing the state $500, $1,000, or do you have that information at hand? Or?
Mr. Chair and members, are you referring to the Youth Skills Training Program?
Never mind. Okay. We'll skip that question.
Okay.
We'll go back to the pipeline someday.
Okay.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Liefeld, are companies that start an apprentice program, say, as a pipe fitter, millwright, electrician, are they required to register that program with Department of Labor and Industry?
Mr. Chair, members, I will actually turn that over to John Aiken, who oversees our apprenticeship program.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Aiken. I am the Director of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship for the Department of Labor and Industry.
Please proceed.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, distinguished member, would you repeat the question for me?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when a company decides they need to start an apprentice program for one of the trades, are they required to register that program with Department of Labor and Industry?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the question. So registered apprenticeship is indeed registered. There is a standard in which is developed in conjunction with this department under the Minnesota Apprenticeship Act. There's certain requirements related to related instruction, how many on-the-job hours are required to be completed, and that is drafted in the form of a written standard which is registered with the department.
Representative Beckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you. And I guess to further go into that, the company I used to work for would do that periodically, where if they couldn't get skilled craftspeople, they'd start a program. So if it's dormant for 2-3 years, then would they have to, are there vehicles in place to make sure that they're up to date with whatever the new standards are if they decide to try to start another one?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the question. Depending upon how long that standard has been registered, there may be certain things that particular sponsor wants to update. And so we provide technical assistance on the compliance as well as the development side of ensuring that standard represents the highest in integrity and quality. And so we work with that particular employer or employer association or employee association, depending upon who the sponsor may be, to register those changes related to that standard to make sure that it's up to date.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is in regards to the youth skill training. Thank you. To the testifier. Would you know who are the partners in St. Paul, whether they are school district or organization or employers? Who would be some of those school partners in St. Paul?
Please identify yourself again and proceed.
Yes. My name is Heather McGannon. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, Representative. We can get you that list, okay. So to identify specifically St. Paul and where they're at in the process. So whether they are they're registered program, or if they are in the process, we can get you all that information.
All right, thank you.
Is there anything further, Representative Moran?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Come from a district that has an incredible amount of new housing starting, and talking with a lot of the builders and developers there, obviously there's labor shortage. One of their frustrations is having the ability to hire high school kids to learn a little bit on the job during the summer, that kind of thing, but they're prevented from safety purposes for being around some of the construction sites. Is there any efforts or direction from the department that we could try to allow some variance on some of that stuff.
Mr. Chair, members, John Aiken, who is the director of our Labor Standards Division, is going to come and address that question.
Mr. Chair, again, and members, my name is John Aiken, Director of Labor Standards and Apprenticeship. I oversee labor standards, prevailing wage, as well as child labor and registered apprenticeship for the department. The question, as I understand it, is whether or not there is a work underway or a construct in which youth can work on construction sites. And as of today, there is not a construct for that. Child labor does not allow for youth under the age of 18 to be on active construction sites. And
Representative Kosnick, did you have further inquiry?
Well, no further inquiry, Mr. Chair, but that, you know, I think this is something that maybe we could take a look at to provide an opportunity for some of our high school students to be exposed to some of the different jobs that are in demand. But simply, you know, one builder that I talked to is frustrated that they can't even hire people, but even youth to just run errands for them, you know, maybe sweep up the construction site at the end of the day, and those kinds of things, where somebody would actually get good experience being exposed to that industry. So we'll see if maybe there's something we can do with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gunter, you had a question.
I have more of a statement. I think Representative Sundin, I think your points are very well taken. I think there should be somebody looking after the family and medical insurance when the injured workers there are not working. Certainly, it would greatly affect their pensions. But basically, I think that is an employer-employee part of the employment agreement that has to be made. I know it's very important to consider those things. It's something that is a very often and too often a gap in what the coverage is for the person and will make the family in dire jeopardy.
All right. Well, I have a couple of questions here. And I'm not sure who's going to answer this one, but in my district, we have a large array of vacant lots that are being they've torn down the building, or it was just a vacant lot or whatever. The other day I witnessed a couple of 25, 30-something-year-olds invincibly standing out on a four-foot-long, it was a microlamb beam. They're obviously putting a balcony on the house of some sort. And there's these two kids just up there tie-vacking the house without a safety harness or anything. And, you know, as young as you are, you're more invincible as when you get older and have seen too many people get hurt. So my question on OSHA is, do they do random inspections? It's one of my I've seen such a well-oiled machine working with the construction, with industry on doing site inspections and a variety of other things that they work together on. How much kind of random out driving in their car inspector and seeing a red flag kind of incident like that and saying, shut this down, we're going to talk with the owner and we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. How often does that happen in the OSHA world in Minnesota?
My name is Jim Kruger. I'm the current Workplace Safety Director, Workplace Safety Programs Director with the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in regards to OSHA inspections, OSHA does have a priority system that we do. The first one that is our number one priority is imminent danger. Those are things that we receive calls from people Anyone can call into our office. We have two people on each day. We will send out an inspector immediately to look at those sites. We did last year about 90 of those. Those are just, all of a sudden we get a call and away we go. Our second priority is the fatalities, catastrophes. And our third priority is what we call random inspections that we do, both in the construction industry and in the general industry sector. Our staff are all out there doing those. Part of our scheduling system, about half is in the construction industry and half is in what we consider the general industry sector. All of our inspections are random. They have to be unannounced. We show up and have an ID and we do an inspection.
So it's just by, I'm trying to be tactful here. Is it just by luck that you would catch somebody like those two kids were doing that I witnessed? Or was it my responsibility, or should I have just called into your office? And by the way, what's your speed dial number?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, certainly we do. We take in 4,500 calls a year and about 2,200 emails. So we do have two staff that are dedicated to that. We do appreciate when you do see people that are walking on things and have fall protection and they are working. We certainly want to hear it. It is our number one priority. Our staff are all trained to identify these things. They're out there doing their inspections. If they would come across that while they're out there doing random, they would stop themselves. But certainly we want to look to the public and get that input and certainly schedule from that too.
Thank you. The safety grant dollars in, I think it's in the, I'm not sure if it's in OSHA or it's in work comp, but I think it's in OSHA. Are those, where do those dollars come from? Are these tax dollars? Are they fines? Are they? I better go back and figure out where I picked that one up.
Mr. Chair, members, we're getting that information for you. Okay. Assistant Commissioner Heather McGannon is going to address that question for you.
Yep.
Hello again. My name is Heather McGannon. I'm Assistant Commissioner at Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members, so our work comp fund assigned rest, it is from a fee. It is from a penalty, and then it is assigned to a different, so our OSHA penalties inform our workers' comp area, and so they do not cross-reference. So like an OSHA penalty will not feed the OSHA program, it will feed another program within our agency.
Thank you. Well, maybe this is what I'm trying to figure out is on page 9, you have the safety grants and the awards matching funds up to 10,000 to qualified employers. Are those tax dollars or are those insurance dollars or are those fines? Where does that $10,000 come from, I guess, is what I'm trying to find out.
Those, Mr. Chair, members, those are penalties to employers.
Okay.
That then go out into safety grants.
Okay. And then I have one final question, and this is for the acting commissioner. Could you please give me the your qualifications to call a match in the combative sports arena, as you are the commissioner of combative sports, and if there's a question, you get to decide who won or who lost.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for that question. While I am lacking in those qualifications, I did, if it interests the committee, serve as a director of the Minnesota Racing Commission for 9 months in one of these substitute roles as well. So I would certainly apply everything I learned in that role.
Well, I just wanted to forewarn you, as maybe you know, but the committee probably doesn't, is that the last Commissioner of Labor and Industry had to call at least one, I know, which was rather controversial at the time, and there might have been one other that he had So those guys know how to fight when they're mad. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. Had they told me that, I may not have accepted this this assignment.
Representative Sundin, you had another question, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Krueger, if you could explain to us. Anyway, first off, thank you for the work you do. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have his number on speed dial, so I could share that with you after. But you talked about citations and penalties for employers that violated codes or the law. Can you talk about when OSHA actually makes an inspection and offers up suggestions for corrective measures, that type of thing? Because that's some of the really good work that you do that people never recognize. How does that work?
Jim Kruger, I'm with Workplace Safety Programs with the Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, representative. OSHA has two components. It has the OSHA compliance, which people typically see. That's the unannounced inspection. When we show up, if we find a violation, it does carry a penalty. The other side of that is what we call our OSHA consultation unit. That is a free service that's available to employers. We prioritize to small business. And in that particular instance, you call into our office, we'll come out, do an on-site inspection, and all we ask that you fix those hazards that are out there. It's a very great service. A lot of employers take advantage of it. And it's something to keep employers working forward, keep employees involved, and everybody protected, which is the bottom line to everybody here in the state of Minnesota, including the OSHA program.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the Department of Labor and Industry? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late with the weather this morning. So if questions have already come up on the youth skills training, I can save it. But if it's not, if it hasn't been covered, may I ask?
Go right ahead.
Okay. First of all, thank you for your work with the youth skills training program. I was a strong advocate of that last biennium. And my district won one of the five pilot grants. So I work very closely on that project and that implementation. So, again, I want to thank you and tell you how much of a difference it's making in five school districts in my area. So that being said, who is the – I'm looking at the org chart. Who is the current manager of that project within DLI?
My name is Heather McGanna, and I'm Assistant Commissioner at Department of Labor and Industry. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for that statement, and we're glad to hear that's making a great impact to your community. I oversee the youth skills training program. The current project manager is Rich Wessels, and he is working with the local partnerships at whatever stage they're at.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure that Rich was still there because he's very, very effective. Can I ask a further question,
right ahead,
Mr. Chair? Thank you. Do you foresee opportunity for us to expand that program and expand in two ways, so additional funding and broader reach across the state and also to other sectors? And particularly I'm seeing interest in the construction sector and schools that would like to have opportunities for kids in that sector.
Mr. Chair, members, we hope to have more funding to help numerous local partnerships because we've had a great demand get up and running and have these startup funds or to help enhance their current program. As far as other industries, that isn't something we're discussing at this point, but that's something we can have more conversation about.
Okay, thank you.
In other words, it depends on how much we get to spend this year here. Just for members of the committee to understand, I think we've got a $30 million expectation for the Rochester Destination Medical Center to come out of this committee's budget this year. So, as delighted as I was to be the chair, all of a sudden, just understand, sometimes you find things out after you say yes. Did you have another question, Representative Haley?
Just in closing, Mr. Chair, if any of my colleagues would like to talk about the youth skills training or would like to partner on a bill to put some funding there, I'd be more than eager to work with you.
Representative Posner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, if the department could comment a little bit from the perspective of the Office of Combative Sports. There's a little bit of talk about sports betting in Minnesota and whether or not the question will come before us. But is there any purview of that department that would relate to?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not that we're aware of.
Anything else? There you go. Well, thank you very much. Members, the department is more than happy to sit down with you and answer any questions that did not get answered here. You have their phone number, and they have a government relations person that I think is in their org chart, and the phone number is around there somewhere. So please take advantage of that. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you.
I think the next testifier is our department with an overview is the Bureau of Mediation Services. So if they are in the office or in the chamber here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Janet Johnson from the Bureau of Mediation Services, the commissioner there. Thank you for having me here, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, thank you for taking that on, and thank you for coming to the committee this morning to explain what your department does and how it saves money for the state.
And it does. The mission of the Bureau of Mediation Services is to promote stable and constructive labor relations between labor and management and promote the use of alternative dispute resolutions in public policy areas. The Bureau, in 1939, the Minnesota Legislature enacted the Minnesota Labor Relations Act as a means of peacefully settling disputes, recognizing that a sound economy is aided by a constructive labor management environment. At that time, the Bureau was known as the Division of Conciliation. In 1969, the division was renamed the Bureau of Mediation Services and became a separate state agency. In 1971, the Public Employment Labor Relations Act was enacted, extending the rights to collectively bargain to public employees. The Bureau of Mediation Services at this time is the smallest cabinet level agency in the state. However, we have jurisdiction over every city, every county, every school district, the University of Minnesota, MNSCU, special boards and commissions in Minnesota, and the executive and judicial branches of Minnesota. We cover all of those areas. We have four major responsibilities. The first one is representation. That's where all of the Bureau's hearings take place. And we do hearings on when labor organization would file a petition with the Bureau. We determine what the appropriate bargaining unit is for that labor organization to represent. Then we conduct elections after we've determined what the appropriate unit is to see if the labor organization should be certified as the exclusive representative or not. Once we've determined the appropriate unit and gone through the election process, those units can be clarified by clarification hearings, whether someone is a public employee or not, whether someone is a supervisor or not, or someone is a confidential employee or not. Then we have under the representation section, we also conduct union democracy elections upon request, and that is to help labor organizations if they need help for union officer elections or tabulating their ratification votes. If it's extremely acrimonious, we can do that. We have done in the past fair share fee challenges, but since the U.S. Supreme Court Janus decision that came out in 2018, we no longer are involved in fair share fee challenges. We do independent reviews for employees that don't have a neutral third party to review their discipline appeal. So they can come file through the Bureau, and we'll act as the third party neutral to intervene in those grievances. We also do arbitrations. Well, we maintain a list of up to 60 qualified arbitrators. They are not employees of the Bureau. They're kind of like independent contractors. We will send out a list of arbitrators to a labor management partnership group. They select their arbitrator, and the arbitrator has the hearing. Then we do mediation as a second major function, and we do both contract mediation, and that is just between a labor organization and an employer, and we also do grievance mediation. And that's a relatively new area that the Bureau has been involved in. We have a very high success rate. At the time the brochures were printed that I think most of you have, there was an 80% success rate for settling grievance mediations. Now it's much higher than that. We've been involved in doing it much longer. Grievance mediation saves employers and labor organizations a lot of costs, keeping them out of arbitration. Under mediation, we also have interest-based collective bargaining that we do, and that's just everyone knows what traditional bargaining is, traditional mediation with the two groups. Interest-based is the Bureau gets involved from day one of the parties' negotiations. We focus in on the interests of the parties. It's a very process way of bargaining, and the mediator is there to help facilitate the parties along the process. We also do labor management committees and trainings, and in that area we will train labor and management groups in committee effectiveness, conflict resolution training. We train on the Public Employer Labor Relations Act. We train on grievance mediation. We train parties on how to present a hearing before the Bureau, and also on mediation training. Then the final part is, the smaller part is the Office of Collaboration Dispute Resolution, and they get involved in public policy mediations. And that's, we are a very small agency, but we cover a lot. Our mediators travel the entire state.
Yes, I know. I've had some, what was the last one? Office of Collaboration and
Office of Dispute Resolution Dispute, Collaboration.
Yeah, I had to sit through about 4 weeks of that one time. And, just, you know, sometimes politics is not as entertaining as others. But it did actually come
great.
It did bring forth a resolution that warring parties that wouldn't even speak to each other prior to the start of it actually agreed and got a bill signed, which was very surprising for many people. Are there any questions for the Bureau of Mediation Services? I will. Oh, Representative Gunter.
I was just curious. What qualifications does an arbitrator have to have? Do they have to be a lawyer? Or
most of our arbitrators on our list at this time are attorneys. You have to have so many decisions that you have written and submitted. You have to apply to be an arbitrator. There's an arbitration fee to be on the list. And then there's an arbitration advisory committee that's also under the Bureau, and we review the arbitrators to see if there's any complaints about them. They have to be a neutral also. Of course, they're going to come out of labor or management, but they have to be a neutral for at least 1 year before they can be on our list.
Thank you.
I have not seen any questions, so I'll finish a little bit of comment here and say that you are a great resource for the state and of all that you serve. You know, I still wanted to get one more thing in mediation, but I appreciate the work that you do and the arbitrators and the mediators. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
If there's any questions that the members have, you certainly know how to get a hold of the Bureau. So is there any other statements or requests or questions for today? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yep, thank you. I will adjourn the meeting. Oh, I got to get a heavy one in. Yeah.